We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leaders, Sports Radio 610. Being joined now by Nick Holley, running back for the hottest football team in the city of Houston. Nick, thanks so much for stopping by. How are things going first two games of the season?
Of course, I appreciate you having me on. Things have been exciting. It's been great. Just, you know, being out with the guys, seeing all the hard work pay off, and it's been a lot of fun.
What's it like playing for June Jones, man? I mean, I got to think of a guy like you, a Swiss Army knife type of player where you can play in the backfield, you can play at the wide receiver position, inside or out. I mean, you got a guy in June Jones, man, who's one of the most creative to do it over the years, over a long period of time, man. It's got to be fun playing his offense.
Yeah, well, first of all, he's very intelligent when it comes to the game of football, and he's an innovator. So being a football guy myself, it's just been awesome to be able to learn from him, to be able to, you know, kind of have him teach me some things and to not only further my knowledge in football, but just kind of push myself in some new aspects and nuances of my game. So it's been a lot of fun learning from him. And like you said, he's the type of guy that he'll find a way to use you. And for myself, you know, being kind of all over the place in the last few years, being a quarterback, wide receiver, running back, it's been nice to see, you know, he sees potential in me in a couple different areas. So it's been very encouraging and it's been very fun. And like you said, he's a knowledgeable guy that, you know, it's fun to learn from him, and it's just been a blessing, to be honest.
Nick, did you know coming in that you were going to be paired up with June Jones? How'd that whole process of you getting to the Houston Roughnecks, how did that work out? I mean, you're obviously very fortunate. There's no doubt about it. But how'd that work out, man?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, I feel as if I got put in the best situation. This is going to sound horrible, but I didn't know who June Jones was. So everybody was telling me, oh, you're going to be out there with – they were talking about Hail Mummy and June Jones and all these guys. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a football guy, but I don't know who that is. So they actually kind of had to explain it to me. My high school coaches were asking me about it and how it kind of came about. The AAF, after I got released from the Rams, the Los Angeles Rams, Randy Mueller had brought me out to Salt Lake in the AAF. And while I was out in Salt Lake, they put me through the physical process to see if they could clear me. And, you know, Randy seen me practice one time. And when I went to go get my physical, the doctors did their exams. And they said, hey, we don't think you have an ACL. And I'm like, no, I have an ACL. I was just out playing with the Rams. I've been training. I've been ready to go, you know, whatever. So we get an MRI. And lo and behold, I do not have an ACL. So,
Like you don't have one. Like when you first said that, I thought you were like, you don't have a torn ACL, but you mean like you don't have one?
Well, I didn't. They couldn't find it. So
like literally couldn't find it in your knee.
Yeah, I had one at one point and they couldn't find it. So long story short, I had to go get a surgery to get a cadaver ACL put in my body. So that's kind of how Mr. Mueller said, hey, listen. You know, he kind of knew what I was going through. It was going to be the third surgery that I had, knee-wise. And he said, listen, stick with me, communicate, and I'm going to stay. And then, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Then the AAF folded, and I'm like, well, shoot, now I'm you know, at square one. So it was crazy how it worked out. And I don't know, you know, there had to be a higher power working because Mr. Mueller ended up coming here to Houston. He stuck with me the whole time right after my surgery, asked me how everything was going, stayed with me throughout the whole process. I sent him some films back and forth, and, you know, I ended up coming out to Houston. So that's kind of how it worked out. It was kind of a luck of a draw type thing, I guess.
Hey, you talked about the knee surgery. I did not know you did not have an ACL, but but you've had – your story is pretty hard to believe, man, with all with the surgeries. And was it a neck or a, did you break your back or neck?
Yep, I broke my back.
You got to talk us through. I didn't mean to giggle at that, by the way. I know how serious that is. You got to take us through that, those injuries and what the heck happened and how you dealt with it and the adversity that you went through in dealing with that and coming back.
Yeah. So originally, it would have been my first. I want to say it might have been my sophomore year. First junior year of football in college. I was going against the Minnesota Gophers, and the corner came out. I remember the play pretty vividly. They got a pretty sweet picture of it, but I jumped over the corner and cleared him pretty good. I landed on one leg. Well, one of their guys was pursuing from backside and smoked me from the back. So, you know, as a football player, you get those little stingers, you get those little hits where you're like, dang, that one, you know, that one hurt, for lack of better words. So I jogged back to the huddle and I'm like, this pain ain't going away in my back. And I kind of tapped my helmet. That was the only time I've ever tapped out of the game. But I jogged over to the sideline and I kind of got on my knees and laid down and told the trainer, I said, hey, something's going on with my back. And then from there on out, I couldn't move. So I don't know if it was adrenaline or what, but long story short, I got at the end of the game, I stayed on the sideline and, it took them about 20 minutes to get me from off the ground to the table. Cause I literally any type of movement just was, it was probably one of the worst physical pains I've ever felt in my life. So I got up on the bench, they kind of wrapped me up, put some ice on it. And I had to have one of my coaches and my twin brother, carried me all the way into the locker room. They ended up giving me some different types of shots to try to help it out. And it was so bad that I didn't even feel the shots go in my back. So, that took a little while to heal. Wasn't a very fun process. Probably, like I said, one of the worst physical pains I've ever been through. Took me about 20, 30 minutes each day to get in and out of bed because you'd be sweating and trying to, So long story short, it was a painful process, and then I recovered from that, came back junior year and was playing running back and slot receiver just a little bit, not too much in the slot, but we had went up against Alabama. A couple quarterbacks went down. I was a quarterback in high school, and originally they had told me, hey, we're going to let you pick your position when you come to college, but everybody knows, that's not how it works. So when I got there, that wasn't my position. Well, after a couple quarterbacks got hurt, I went to quarterback, finished out my career at Kent State at quarterback, but it would have been the last two games or last three games of the season we were playing a team, and that's when my first – we were playing Bowling Green and got kind of, what do you want to call it, a low hit to the knee. Guy missed the block, and it just kind of exploded my knee. So my first ACL, MCL, medial meniscus tear – happened the whole off season. That was kind of the first experience I had through an ACL surgery, and if you've had one, you know how strenuous the recovery is and how frustrating it is, because it's almost like teaching a newborn baby how to walk again. It's just everything is not there. So and the process of healing is just so slow. So the whole off season I recovered. I was doing doing therapy and trying to come back stronger, and I had come back stronger. I went against, I forget where the first game was, but the second game was against Clemson. Had a really good game as a quarterback. I mean, as a team, we didn't do so hot, but had a pretty good game myself. So I was on a high. I'm like, I just came back from the surgery. I'm doing really well. The next game, third game in against Marshall, I almost felt like my knee needed to pop, my left knee. This now the left knee, not the right knee that just had surgery. Well, I go to make a read, my running back kind of pulls me forward. I make a cut, same time, my knee did pop, and the second ACL occurred. So at that point, I stood up, kind of felt it, and I jogged off to the sideline, and I told the trainer, I said, hey, I think I just tore my ACL. And so they went through the checks, and lo and behold, I tore my ACL. So I kind of was at a very low point. I remember I called my brother at halftime and told him what was going on, and you know, we're pretty close being twins. We're best friends. And, you know, I kind of lost it, bawled my eyes out a little bit. And I always said after the first one, if another one happened, put me down like a racehorse, because it was the first one wasn't fun to come back from. But, you know, I kind of buckled down and said, you know what, this is something that I still want to pursue. That was my last season in college, and I knew I'd want to go to the NFL. I knew it was going to be a huge uphill battle, being that come about 4.5 months, my pro day was at occurring, and I needed to make an occurrence or a presence. And I think at about 6 months is when minicamp started. So at 4.5 months after my second surgery, I went to pro day, did everything but position drills. Did, you know, fairly well, I guess, for having a 4.5 month old ACL. And then I went off to the Rams. They ended up calling me, picking me up. And then the third ACL is when, you know, they released me and I went off to Salt Lake. So long story short, it's been about 4.5 years of straight rehab on some part of my body. And it's been, you know, I've had some very low points, but I always tell myself, you know what, you get about 2-3 days to sulk and to feel bad for yourself, and then you move on and you pursue your dream. On my cell phone, I have something that says, if you give up on your dreams, what's left? And I feel as if that's all of what life is about, is, you know, never giving up on your dreams and, you know, pursuing it till it's done. So that's kind of my short story, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy what you've been through. I love the fact that you're still pursuing that dream, as you mentioned. And the Houston Roughnecks off to a great start at 2-0. Nick, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing your story. We'll be watching you this season.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and sounds good.
All right. Nick Hawley, running back for the Houston Roughnecks. As you can tell, he's been through some things in his football career. And that's, to me, what the XFL is about. It's about guys this that are cusp players, that maybe they've been unlucky through the past with injuries, whatever the case may be, trying again for that one last shot, for that dream, as he said.
No doubt about it. And look, he's a big part of their offense. I mean, he's a guy that can play multiple positions. And, you know, we talked a lot about Taysom Hill, and I know it was in a light of the last couple of weeks about him being compared to Drew Brees. And I didn't like that disrespect that was shown towards one of the greatest, but he's cut from that same cloth of Taysom Hill. I mean, that's what he has the ability to go catch it over the middle, not just the easy catches, but the difficult catches. He climbed the ladder in week one and caught a big throw over the middle by P.J. Walker. And when you got a guy like P.J. Walker that moves around as much as he does, those Swiss Army knife type of players are even more effective. So, yeah, man, Nick Hawley, not only has he got a great story, but he's a hell of a football player, and it's going to be fun to watch this season unfold.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, Major League Baseball players going after, well, Major League Baseball players, and what are the commissioner's thoughts about this? We'll also get to some of your calls, 713-572-4610. This is Clint Sterner and Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, you have Major League Baseball player on Major League Baseball player hate. And Commissioner Robert Manfred is surprised by all of this.
You know, first, I've been around a long time, and I've never seen the kind of commentary from players about other players in the entire time that I've been involved.
It's almost like World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, whatever it's called these days. It's almost like these – thank you, Jim Ross. It's almost like these MMA guys who are trying to, like, sell a fight whenever they're talking trash. Like, Conor McGregor is so good at it. Whenever he's trying to sell a fight, he just talks trash to everybody else. That's what's going on right now in Major League Baseball. And like Manfred said, it's something that I can't remember ever happening in baseball before.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're living in a day and age where – information travels so fast, right? Is I mean, it's instantly. If Bellinger says it in LA in spring training, then it's going to be in Houston or West Palm Beach, Florida. It's beach, not what I say.
You said West Palm. I mean, you were there.
No, what I say last time though? West Palm Springs.
Did you? I don't know.
I gave you Springs. Isn't Palm Springs in California?
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. I mean, it couldn't be any. Not only was I wrong, but it couldn't have been any further in the United States away from the other.
Clint Sterner will take you coast to coast.
There you go, coast to coast, in a mistake. It just happened so fast that I think the combination of how it happened in this mess, right, is. People are commenting so fast, it's damn near in real time, right? So there's no going home, having your little dinner, talking to the wife about it, hearing what Correa had to say, or hearing the apology, and then going, well, you know, in the next couple of hours, somebody will come out with a little something about, you know, was Altuve, was he involved or wasn't he involved? And then Bellinger can comment. No, it's immediate. It is immediate response. And unfortunately, when that's the case, man, it's dangerous. I think the dangerous aspect of it, to me, is what really stands out. It's one thing for players to dislike each other, to pop off to each other in throughout the season and use the media to send messages back and forth. But man, the anger and the hate and the distrust that's been created with this just takes it to a whole nother level.
Now, the Astros have fought back, obviously, with Carlos Correa defending Jose Altuve and doing his thing. Well, I saw two quotes today. They were both in the Washington Post. They were talking to a writer, couldn't get this on audio, but two more Astros fought back today. Josh Reddick, he had this to say about what else is going on with this player-to-player hate around Major League Baseball. Reddick saying, at some point, you have to move on and not give a S-word. Reddick added, we're going to go out there and win and shut everybody up. Lance McCullers, the team's trash-talking are going to have to play us, except for the guys who are popping off the most. Those guys aren't going to have to face us. He's talking about Markakis here, I'm pretty sure, which is maybe why they feel like they can speak like that. McCullers continued, we're moving on. That's not what people may want to hear, but we stood here as men. We addressed the scandal. We're just looking forward to playing baseball again. So here, you can see Reddick and McCullers getting a little fed up with all of the conversations going on around Major League Baseball. And those two, Reddick and McCullers, flat out saying, let's just go play and see what happens.
Yeah, look, I think that's the only thing that you can do at this point in time. I know J.D. Martinez spoke yesterday as well, or a couple of days ago. His audio didn't make our show yesterday because I guess it wasn't controversial enough, right? We planned to get there, but me and Smitty didn't get there. But you know, he essentially said the same thing. It's gone too far. It's time to move on. He was very professional in his comments about what's going on, and you could tell he was pissed off. But he too had the same message in terms of, hey, let's just move on. And look, the further you get removed from this, when the commissioner gets through with all of his tour, and then addressing follow up pressers about the mistakes that he made when he spoke each time for 30 to 45 minutes, when all that's water under the bridge, and the first batter gets plucked, then I think the Major League Baseball and fans, I think, across the board nationally, will move on beyond this. Now, wherever the Astros go, there's going to be a cloud over the top of them, and there's going to be a lot of hate, and there's going to be a lot of adversity they're going to have to fight through when they get off the bus, when they step to the plate, when they leave the clubhouse, the locker room at the end of the game. There's going to be a lot of hate there. But I think when we're talking about nationally, I think this will all fade pretty quickly once spring training gets – you get the meat of spring training and everybody gets beyond – being hung on every single press conference.
Here's another one from Robert Manfred discussing the immunity the players received.
One of the principal complaints seems to be that the Houston players were not disciplined, and, you know, that lack of discipline, the immunity, was negotiated with the union that represents players.
So that was Robert Manfred's thoughts on why the players got immunity. I also heard Manfred say how, look, the Astros, you might think that they didn't get punished in terms of games that they've had suspended or things like that or fines or anything, you know, kind of in that regard. But Manfred said, look, the Astros are being punished in the court of public opinion. This is going to be something that they have to carry with them forever when they're up for Hall of Fame candidates.
Nobody want to hear that, though, JB. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's true. I mean,
yeah,
like, I agree. Barry Bonds never got busted for steroids. He's not in the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds never broke a Major League Baseball rule, ever, ever. He's the all-time home run champion in terms of career and single season, and the dude's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. I just people don't want to hear that. You know what I mean? I mean, ultimately, the Manfred coming out and saying he's been around baseball and not been around. He's been inside baseball for a long time, right? Has he been the commissioner for 5 years? Is that right?
Yeah, somewhere around there. But he's been around longer.
He's been around baseball for a long time, and he the two things that surprised him the most about this entire handling of the scandal, top to bottom at this point, was the player-to-player hate and the fact that the players or the hate that has been voiced by the players, a lot of it revolves around the immunity that the players involved have, and that came from, essentially stemmed from the Players Association. So, Manfred, again, I love the fact that the dude hangs his ego at the door. I love the fact that he's apologized for the metal trophy comment that he had. And I love the fact that he's not afraid to go, hey, you know what? I'm surprised at the fact these players are talking to each other like this. I'm surprised that they're not more informed and they understand that the immunity was given and requested, in fact, demanded by the Players Association, who represents their best interests. So, again, salute you, Rob Manfred. I salute you, my brother.
Let's go to the line, 713-572-4610. Ben, you're on.
Hey, guys. Listen, about this scandal and everything and all these player, this player hate coming from the other teams, let me tell you something. If these guys that are popping off can say that their team never stole signs, and which we know it's league-wide, if they never stole signs, they get room to talk. But they have. They just need to shut up and let the game go and play. You lose because, oh, well, they had unfair sign stealing. Well, didn't you steal signs too? You just didn't get caught. So,
well, Ben, it's hard to prove, right? Like, I mean, I've been on the more Astro side of this, and I share your belief that I think that it's something that is league-wide. I've said that from the very beginning. We've seen proof that pre-memo, the Red Sox cheated, that the Yankees cheated, and they were fined for this. But if you can't prove it, that's something that can't hold up, right?
Well, then again, there's also the analytics. That's cheating too, technically speaking. So you get into this gray area, and people have a lot of room to talk. But then again, you know what? In the end, the Astros won. Whether this helped them or not, people do hit walk-off home runs. Happens all the time. So
alluding to
it's all going
to
be played out. You know, I mean, you know, it happens. And you blaming somebody else? What about the games that you won off the Astros? Was your sign feeling better then?
Well, Ben's getting into a lot of gray area there that hasn't been proven. Like, I agree with Ben. I think that it is something that is league-wide, but until Major League Baseball comes out and says this team was doing this here, you can't just use that in the basis of your conversation.
I think a big point of a big part of what Ben said that's spot on is I think a lot of the outrage is ridiculous. Do the Dodgers maybe have a reason to be a little pissed off? And you know, I understand that if the cheating and the sign stealing went on during the season, the Astros may have never been there. There's a lot of may have, a lot of gray area. They got there, and did it impact that game? The Dodgers also got that far. So could I listen to them maybe be a little pissy about it? Sure. Judge, you know, being in that MVP race with Altuve, and I'm not saying that by any means that he should have won the – I don't believe that. I don't believe that Altuve won the MVP because he was getting pitches. But could I maybe have a conversation with Judge about how important it was?
You understand where he's coming from, right?
Yeah, I understand where those guys – some of this outrage coming from other guys. What's my guy's name yesterday that I screwed up? Markakis?
Markakis, yeah.
I mean, come on. Did it really affect your – I mean, you're just outraged.
What do you mean? How'd you screw him up?
Oh, I said Markakis.
Well, he's talking Markakis. That's what he's talking about, Markakis.
Yeah, yesterday. I know it's a surprise to you, but I butchered that damn last name right there.
We've all been there.
After I said it three times, I said, B-Mac, it's Markakis, right? Yeah. I asked him three times before we go on air. Then we go on air, I'm like, Markakis. He's like, you screwed it up. Put a dollar in the kitty. But, I mean, I do believe that a large percentage of the outrage is silly. I mean, it's guys that just mic in the face. Got to be tough. Can't just say, hey, man, I ain't got no comment. Let's roll.
You know what's not silly, though? The Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs
ain't
Tour.
Ain't that the damn truth.
That we're kicking off on Tuesday. It's presented by Coors Light. We're going to highlight some of the best 7 crawfish joints over the city of Houston over the next 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. Give us some feedback on social media where we should go. Use hashtag Best Bugs. We're starting in 6 days at Buffalo Run in Spring. That's about 5 miles from where I live. Buffalo Run in Spring. We're going to get started on February 25th in part of Fat Tuesday. Food specials, $6.10 per pound of crawfish. It includes corn, potatoes, and, of course, the crawfish, mushroom, sausage, all of that. Drink specials, Miller Lite Pint, $1.50. Coors Light bottles for $2.50. We'll be there from 10 to 6, and it'll be this upcoming Tuesday at Buffalo Run in Spring. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, We're going to talk to Texans football analyst and sideline reporter John Harris. We want to start talking some draft with John Harris, and also what are the Texans' obstacles this offseason in free agency and in the draft. That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner and Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Joined now by Houston Texan football analyst and sideline reporter John Harris. John, how's it going? I saw a report today that said that the Texans have some of the biggest offseason challenges. I guess it's a story, not a report. Some of the biggest offseason challenges of any team in the NFL. How difficult are the challenges the Texans are facing this offseason?
I think they're pretty hefty. But I think a lot of people get caught up in the, well, they don't have a first round pick. I mean, it's one player, but you know, they got Laremy Tunsil here basically before 1 year before they would have gotten, I don't know, who are they going to get at 26, at left tackle? Who are they going to get down there? Prince Tegawanagu from Auburn. I mean, I'll take Laremy Tunsil. Thank you very much. So, I know a lot of people will bring that up. You know, this is a challenge, I guess. And I think a lot of people are probably, you know, bringing in the, well, you know, Deshaun's going to sign a contract and, you know, Laremy's going to sign a contract and that's going to reduce the cap space. Yeah, it's going to reduce it, but it's not going to eliminate it. So, yeah, they've got things to fix, but, you know, name a team that doesn't. I mean, even Kansas City. I mean, is Kansas City a perfect team? I mean, offensively, pretty close. But even they would probably tell you their guard situation is not very good. Stefan Wisniewski is not great. He was at the fill-in. So they've got to address that. They've got to address the corner position because they'll probably lose Bashard Breeland at one corner. And I don't think Charvarius Ward is very good at the other corner. So they've got to still address the corner position. That's what they wanted to do in the draft. And then all the corners got taken. So they're like, we'll take Mecole Hardman. We'll take him because we don't know if we're going to have Tyreek Hill. And then it just so happened they ended up having both of them at the end of the year. So, look, there's no team that is, you know, completely, perfect that doesn't have holes to fill. I mean, who would you rather be at this point? You'd rather be the Texans or, you know, the Cowboys from as far as questions. I mean, you know Deshaun Watson is going to be the starting quarterback next year. But in Dallas, do you know absolutely without question that Dak Prescott's going to be the quarterback? Now, I think it will happen, but you don't know that for sure. And if all of a sudden Dak decides, I don't know if I want to go back to Dallas. I'm going to take the money and go somewhere else. Then all of a sudden you got big problems in Dallas. What's the situation in Carolina? You don't think Carolina's got holes to fill? So there are a lot of teams, I think, out there that have got plenty of holes. But I think because the trade for Laremy and for Kenny and for what people don't always keep in mind, two other draft picks, yes, lower rounds, day three picks, but still two other draft picks, because people look at that and say, well, they didn't win the Super Bowl, and that was an all-in move. Oh, they got a lot of holes to fix. I don't know if they have any more holes to fix than they did last year. I mean, last year we went into the year going, they got to fix the offensive line, the entire thing, and they got to try and fix the secondary. Well, the offensive line got fixed for sure, and they repaired the secondary a little bit. So now they've got work to do on the secondary. So let's continue the work on the secondary and see where we are at the end of it. I just don't know that I completely and totally buy the fact that this is like, oh my God, they've got to blow this thing up because there's so many holes. I don't know if I buy that completely.
I ain't buying that at all, Johnny. So I'm with you, brother. What I looked at on your social media, man, your Twitter account. You got a cool little exercise going here with the $18 to spend, and you slotted each several free agents at a dollar amount, and it'd be hard, tough to explain and have our draft on air here, but can you tell me what guys, what combination in the three rounds for $18 did Johnny Harris go with?
Yeah, we're gonna do this tonight. So I'm still studying my list, but I'm more of a mindset, and I think I can't remember who I heard talking about this. It may have been, I think it was McClain talking about it with Sean and Seth this morning. You know, I think one of the great moves the Texans made in 2011 was when they needed a corner. Actually, they needed an entire secondary, to be honest. You know, Kareem was going into his second year, but it was a really rough first year. You know, Glover Quinn, they weren't really sure whether he was a corner or safety. So they had a couple of pieces, but they weren't really sure how they went together. After that, it was just kind of a mess. And so everybody in the city of Houston was like, you have to sign Nnamdi Asamoah. He is the top corner in the market. You have to give him anything and everything that you possibly can give him. And then the Texans said, no, we're going to pay Jonathan Joseph and we're going to pay Danielle Manning. So the money that they would have spent on one guy, Nnamdi Asamoah, who's out of the league 2 or 3 years later, they spent on two players, addressed two positions by going to the next player in line that actually, in retrospect, was better for the Texans than what Nnamdi Asamoah would have been, getting Jonathan Joseph and Danielle Manning. And that to me was the philosophy of that sort of work. If you have one singular hole, like that's it, then yeah, okay, if you've got the cap room, then fire at that one particular player that you think is the best for your organization. Because you might look at it and go, hey, look, Nnamdi Asamoah is not going to be the type of guy that fits in a man cover situation. He's a great cover three zone corner. So if you bring him in here and you're going to play a bunch of man, well, that doesn't fit. So Jonathan Joseph really fit with what the Texans were going to do with Wade Phillips, and he's fit ever since. So to me, I look at this exercise and say, I'd much rather have 3-4 players that are of, you know, not the highest caliber player, but if I can fill 2-3 holes with really good, solid, capable players that fit for what I want to do, then I feel like I've accomplished what I want to in free agency. I think what happens for a lot of people is they see the Nate Solders of the world. We didn't get Nate Solder. Fire everybody. It's like, what's Nate Solder done with the Giants? And the Giants are sitting there stuck with a $15 to $17 million a year contract. So I can tell you my philosophy will be, I'm not paying top dollar for some of the guys. And I put the dollar figure on everybody on that list. So if you go to my social media, you'll see exactly what we're doing. But it's $18 to spend. You have 3 rounds. You don't have to use them all. If you want 2 players and you want the top-notch player and you want a bottom player, that's fine. But I wanted 3 very capable, well-priced players that I know can come in and impact this team right away, because this team is not a year away. This team is right now. And I think bringing in players to say, well, you know, we can win. No, it's got to be right now. So bring in 3 guys that I think could end up playing for this team and playing very early and making a significant impact for this team. So I got my eyes on a few guys, mainly in the defensive side. And that's my guess, is that we'll go defense, but never know what can happen on the offensive side as well.
You can listen to that on Texans All Access today after our show. John, I saw James Palmer tweet this a moment ago. The Texans re-signed nose tackle Brandon Dunn a little bit earlier today. James Palmer alludes to the fact that it could decrease the chances of bringing DJ Reader back to the Texans. Any validity to that?
You know, just from a numbers standpoint, you sort of think, well, okay, if you bring Brandon back. But Brandon does a different thing than DJ does. I know people look at him and go, wait a second, they're kind of the same guy. I mean, if you really watch what they do, they're asked to do 2 different things. And so to me, they're 2 different players. They're not redundant players. Now, there will be times where they're doing some of the same things, depending on what team they're playing. I mean, look, if we're playing Tennessee, then yeah, they're both probably used in the same capacity. But we don't play Tennessee every week. We play different teams that are going to throw the ball around, that are going to run different RPO schemes. So they play different roles. So I don't know if one has to do with the other, to be honest. It's not as if, Brandon's going to end up breaking the bank on a free agent contract that you can, financially, we can only bring one guy back. You know, now if you're looking at, if you were looking at DJ Reader next, you know, and Dominican Sue, and both of them are going to be paid somewhere in the $10 to $11 million range. Okay, maybe you look at it and go, all right, maybe we can't have both. But Brandon's not going to break the bank and did. And I'm glad he's back, because he does a lot of the dirty work that people don't end up seeing, man. He is really good at what he does. And obviously so is DJ. And DJ gets a lot of credit, as well he should. But to me, they're not the same guy. They're different players most of the time. So because you're not going to break the bank for Brandon, I don't see why there's any correlation between Brandon signing and DJ not. I still think you can bring both of them back as long as you get a deal that works for DJ and obviously works for the team.
And he didn't break the bank. Aaron Wilson reporting that it was a 3-year deal worth $12 million, so an average annual of $4 million, not something that's going to put the Texans in any sort of hole entering free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key is, finding good players. They signed Angelo Blackson two years ago. To, I think, a pretty similar deal, if I remember correctly. And Angelo was not a guy that played every single down, but, man, he went out there and did some really good things for this football team, playing the run, bat down passes at times. Not the pass rusher that, you know, a guy like Chris Jones from Kansas City is, but, you know, then again, who is? Who's in the class with Chris Jones, you know, from Kansas City? So, you know, those dynamic interior pass rushers, of all the things that don't grow on trees, those guys definitely do not. There are not many of those guys that you can find that come in that can play all three downs. And when the ball is thrown, those guys are severe impact players rushing the quarterback. You know, a lot of times the guys that are in the interior, well, they're there for a reason. They're big and they can play off blocks in the run game, but they're not the greatest rushing the passer. The freaks, the Chris Joneses of the world, those guys end up getting paid close to, you know, $17, $18 million a year, and that's about what he's going to get paid. I just hope it's not in Kansas City. So I think Brandon Dunn coming back, DJ Reader, those two are sort of separate from one another. But the one that I would look at is Angelo Blackson. Can you have Brandon Dunn and Angelo Blackson? Because to me, those two are probably more similar to what they do than those two are to DJ Reader, if that makes sense.
Johnny, let's jump to the other side of the ball, man. I think there's two places on this team where I guess an upgrade, a more talented player, I think would it's pretty easy to point out at running back and tight end. You could, if in the draft you get a kid that's super dynamic that just happens to be available when your turn comes around in the second round, and not that, you know, I'm not saying they should address that. Obviously, there's a lot of variables of what they do in free agent determines what they do with the second round pick, but just. Those are two positions that I feel like just the fans look at and go, man, there could be more talent, more speed, more dynamic playmaking ability at the running back position and at the tight end position. Not mad at all of the production that the Texans got out of the guys that are in the locker room right now and that were part of the team last year. However, I don't know that I can disagree with the fact that there is room for improvement from a talent standpoint.
Well, I think the other aspect of it is, you know, Clay, you know as well as I do, and Jeremy, you've been around the game a long time. You watch teams win championships, and you're like, okay, well, that team won a championship. How do we do what they do? And you know you're not going to do everything like that, but, you know, and the often used phrase, it's a copycat league. Well, when you look at the two teams that made the Super Bowl, what did you see in San Francisco? George Kittle. What did you see in Kansas City? Travis Kelce. And what did we see on that fateful Sunday in Kansas City? A whole heck of a lot of Travis Kelce. Now, the irony in that is the one guy that I thought they have on the roster that comes close, and it's the guy that I actually compared Kelce to, is Kali Waring. Now, we won't know until the bullets start firing in training camp and on into preseason what we have in Kali Waring. But I think it was sort of to what you just said, Clint. I think as they were going through the draft, they looked up in the third round and went, hey, wait a second. We've got a really high grade on this guy. Look at this guy's athleticism. Can you imagine this athleticism with Deshaun, and that helps us on the interior passing game and stretching defenses? Man, Waring's still on the board. Let's go get this guy. And it was just unfortunate that he got hurt, and then you got production from your other tight ends. And so you don't really, you know, rock the boat bringing a rookie back, not to mention you had Jordan Thomas that you could bring back as well, who already knew what was going on. So I think Waring is the guy that they sort of look at and say, this is a guy that can amp up our explosiveness rating at the tight end position. And my guess would be that they wouldn't draft a fourth tight end in 3 years. But then again, you know, until you get it right, and maybe Waring is that guy, maybe Jordan Thomas takes another step forward, Jordan Akins, et cetera. But I wouldn't imagine they would look at a tight end in the draft. Now, running back is a position that I wouldn't be surprised that they look at in the draft, considering the fact that there are so many different running backs in this draft that you could go, okay, I could see this guy fitting with this offense. I could see this guy fitting with this offense. A.J. Dillon from Boston College at 6'1", 245 pounds. And then you've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I'm actually watching right now against Auburn, on the other side of it, who is kind of like a mini Mark Ingram. It's like, okay, could you see both of them fitting with this offense? And you're like, well, yeah, I could. I mean, they're two totally different running backs, but I can see both of them finding a fit in this particular offense because you've got number four at quarterback. So that, to me, the running back one is the one that seems very intriguing. Now, they've got to decide what to do with Carlos Hyde, and you know, who knows whether they're gonna bring him back. He now knows the system, and I love what Carlos gave to them last year. But if you end up drafting a running back, you know you're going to pay a whole heck of a lot less than you will for what you would pay for Carlos Hyde. And I know that makes running backs mad that, oh, wait, we can't get free agent deals because they're just going to draft the next guy. And unfortunately, that's just kind of the way that the NFL business has gone, that running backs have become not as – well, they're just not paying them. I mean, look at the top-paid running backs in the league, and you're like, whoa, look what's happening to Todd Gurley. Look what happened to David Johnson in Arizona. I mean, you know, these guys got paid. It didn't go well in that second contract. So from that perspective, I would think that the draft is going to be one definite spot that they're going to look at, in large part because of the talent that is there at the running back position that could come in and impact this offense and going forward.
I'm really intrigued with the Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, how far do you think he falls? I say falls. Where do you think he's? Where do you think he ends up in the draft? I guess where do you have him slotted in?
I think when it's all said and done, Clay, I'll probably have him somewhere between probably 55 to 65, probably somewhere in that range. I think he's in the second round. And I think part of that is, and I don't want to contradict myself, but I do think part of it is teams look at running backs, and especially when there are so many of them in the draft, when they have other needs, they're like, look, this is a pretty heavy draft for running backs. We'll get one later. But I'm watching Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I watch him against Texas, and I'm watching him against Auburn. And obviously I saw the games against Alabama and whatever, Clemson and all the different games that he played this year. And as I'm watching him, more, I just see a kind of a mini Mark Ingram. I mean, I see his vision and I see his power. I mean, just the runs, the things that he sees. And then the ability, once he gets out in space, I mean, spin movies through at the University of Texas to get loose on a run. It's like, my goodness. And then you throw in the fact that, you know, going into this year, I think a lot of people felt like, well, you know, he's kind of the receiving back. You know, he'll be the guy, you know, they'll go with some of these freshman running backs or maybe a little bit bigger, stronger, you know, more five-star recruit sort of thing. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you couldn't take him out of the lineup because he'd catch four or five passes. He'd run for 120 yards and, you know, found a way to get in the end zone, and teams were having a nightmare trying to tackle him. And I just think about – if you think about Tennessee Titans with a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, Derrick Henry is so tough, obviously, because he's so big. But what makes it tough against Henry is he just forces you to have to come up in the fourth quarter and make tackles. Well, that's what Clyde Edwards-Helaire does too. He forces you to come up and make tackles on him. And I can tell you this, having played, you know, back in safety and linebacker in those positions, the last thing you want to see in the fourth quarter is a guy that's compact and strong and low to the ground, because you can come up and hit him with everything you've got, and you might just bounce off like a flea hitting a dog. So from that perspective, I think he has got a really good NFL future. I think Joe Brady, those guys at LSU, when they're all said and done, they need to send Joe Brady a thank you card because of all the money that they're going to end up making this year. Because it's amazing what Joe Brady meant to that offense, to those players, to Burrow, to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to Ja'Marr Chase, to Justin Jefferson. Those guys are all going to be high draft picks. Not Chase, he'll be back for another year. But those guys are going to all be high draft picks because of what Brady was doing with that passing game at LSU and Steve Ensminger was doing with the entire offense. They all owe him a huge gratitude of thanks, no matter where he's coaching from now on, because this offense, it's unbelievable to watch how – and I watched the Texas game earlier today, and I texted Landry, and I was kind of poking at Landry, and I was like, Landry, your boy Tyler Lando just got worked by Joe Brady. It was amazing to watch. It was just amazing. Like, okay, now they're going to go up-tempo. Texas can't handle it. Now they're going to take advantage of this guy who's having struggles in coverage. This guy this underneath defender can't cover anybody. Now they're going to pick on him. And it was masterful to watch Joe Brady just pick apart that University of Texas defense, play in and play out every single play. Unfortunately, LSU's defense got picked apart too, but that's a different story. But man, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to come into this league and I think do some good things. And I think he's a guy that the Texans will absolutely look at and wonder how they can fit him into this scheme, because I think he'll fit very, very well.
John, I'm looking forward to see how you spend those $18 tonight on Texans All Access.
You know, I have a feeling that I will be a little bit more frugal with my dollars than somebody like DP Sidhu, who has no budget. When we go on the road and she goes shopping, there's no budget. So I'm a little worried about her. And she texted back like 18. That's all I get is 18. Like, yep, you get 18. So go to my Twitter at J Harris Football, and you can see what we're talking about. And then you can tweet to me the three players that you would draft under $18.
All right, John. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to that tonight.
Appreciate you, boys. Thank you.
John Harris, Texans football analyst and sideline reporter, joining us on Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. Robert Manfred answered some questions today about how the Astros were cheating in 2017 and if they were cheating in the postseason. We dive into it next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.